a challenge. VOA won the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from Jonathan and from Brian Lynn. Faith Perlow talks about what versus which in this week's Ask a Teacher. We close the show by listening to part one of Stephen Crane's The Open Boat. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Severe flooding in America's Yellowstone National Park has caused widespread damage and may have resulted in permanent changes. The recent floodwaters changed the path of a river popular for fishing. It also destroyed homes, bridges, and roadways. Yellowstone became America's first national park in 1872. It is known for its natural beauty that includes mountains, rivers, and lakes. The forces of fire and ice shaped the park over thousands of years. It is a place where visitors can get close to different kinds of wildlife. Most of the 9,000 square kilometer park is in the state of Wyoming, but parts of it also stretch into Montana and Idaho. Flooding caused by heavy rains and melting mountain snow resulted in widespread destruction. It drove more than 10,000 visitors out of the park. The rain also damaged hundreds of homes in nearby communities. No one has been reported hurt. Yellowstone officials have said the park could remain closed for up to 1 week. Some entrances may not open all summer. The chief administrator of Yellowstone is Superintendent Cameron Shawley. He told the Associated Press, "I've heard this is a 1,000-year event, whatever that means these days." He added that these kinds of weather events seem to be happening more and more frequently. The water washed away camp structures, flooded small towns, and cut power to parts of southern Montana and northern Wyoming. The event happened as the park was beginning its busy summer season. Yellowstone receives millions of summer visitors. This year, the park is celebrating its 150th anniversary. Some of the worst damage happened in the northern part of the park and nearby communities in southern Montana. The Yellowstone River was running at a historically high level of 4.9 meters as it flowed past Billings, Montana's largest city. The city gets its water from the river and was forced to close its treatment plant because it cannot operate effectively with water levels that high. Billings officials said the city only had a 24 to 36 hour supply of water. They were asking citizens to conserve water until the river could drop and the plant could restart operations. None of us planned a 500-year flood event on the Yellowstone when we designed these facilities, said Debbie Melling, the city's public works director. The sudden severe flooding pushed a popular fishing river off its natural path, possibly permanently. It may also force park officials to rebuild destroyed roadways a safer distance away. Yellowstone officials say the northern half of the park is likely to remain closed over the summer. This will greatly affect local economies that depend on summer tourists. Bill Berg is a local government official in Park County, Montana. He told the AP that businesses in the town of Gardiner had just started to recover from the drop in visitors during the COVID-19 pandemic. It's a Yellowstone town, and it lives and dies by tourism, and this is going to be a pretty big hit, he said. They're looking to try to figure out how to hold things together. As the floodwaters ease, park officials are turning their attention to the effort of rebuilding many kilometers of ruined roads and hundreds of washed-out bridges. Yellowstone officials say workers will not be able to fully investigate the damage until next week. Kelly Goonan is a professor at Southern Utah University and an expert in running national parks and recreation areas. She said the rebuilding operation will take a very long time. This is something we're definitely going to feel the impacts of for the next several years, Goonan said. I'm Brian Lynn.
The Korean pop band BTS announced Tuesday they would take a break from group musical activities to do individual projects. Many in South Korea reacted with surprise at the news the 7-member K-pop group presented in a video release. I could relate to them as they shed tears and honestly told us how they felt, fan Nini Lee told Reuters from an eatery in Seoul where she had gathered with other fans. Their voice gave me huge strength when I had tough times. Now I want to give my voice of courage to them, she added. Kim Young-sun runs the eatery. She said she felt sorry that she, as a fan, had only wanted more from BTS at a time when they were struggling. She wished them a well-earned break. In the video, BTS leader and rapper RM said he had felt guilty and afraid to ask for the rest that he really needed. Singer Jimin said they were struggling to find their identity in what he called an exhausting process. RM added that the K-pop industry could not provide young artists with time to mature. Jeondukhyun is a South Korean pop culture writer. He observed that the Korean music industry has long centered on making money. He added, "The stars cannot take a rest even when they burned themselves out." On social media, some other fans blamed BTS's management group, HYBE, for pushing for new albums and other money-making opportunities. The company did not immediately respond to a Reuters request for comment. Tuesday's unexpected announcement caused anger among investors in HYBE. Its shares dropped 25% on Wednesday, losing nearly $1.55 billion of its market value. They've planted dynamite in the hearts of shareholders,
one person wrote on a Samsung Securities stock trading site. The word dynamite refers to a BTS hit song. HYBE shares had performed relatively poorly in recent months. The company's chief executive and some BTS members sold stock totaling $7.75 million in December. All able-bodied South Korean men are required to have about 2 years of military service. The oldest member of BTS, Jin, is required to begin his duty next year. Korean legislators are still deciding on a bill pushing to provide military exemptions to world-famous artists. There is continued debate over whether BTS should have similar benefits that athletes enjoy. Lee Ki-hoon is a financial expert at Hana Financial Investment Company Limited. He wrote in a report that BTS's lack of public activity could result in an income loss of about $581 million in 2023. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question from Sarah, a reader of our website, about the difference between using the question words what and which. Hello, could you please tell me which one is correct? What color is missing? Or which color is missing? Zara. Dear Zara, thank you for your question. Either of these questions could be correct. What and which can both be used to form a question. So either of these questions could be correct. It depends on the situation and the information we are seeking. Let us consider each question word more closely. When we ask a question using what, we are asking for information because we do not know the answer. The information can be about things or actions. For example, what is your favorite kind of pizza? In this example, the person who asks the question does not know what kind of pizza the other person likes. There can be an unlimited number of possible answers. This is important when trying to decide between the two question words. A person answering the pizza question could say a favorite combination of toppings, like meat and cheese, or even a favorite style of pizza. We use which to ask questions about specific information or when we are presenting a set of choices. We may have some background information that we want to explore more by using a which question. For example, if I am in a parking lot with my friend and I know she has a car, but am unsure which is hers, I could ask a question using which. Which is yours, the blue truck or the red car? Here, the question deals with a limited choice, so we use the question word which. We can use an example using geography to easily show the difference between what and which. What is the capital of the United States? The answer is unknown, and the choices are unlimited. Which is the capital of the United States? Philadelphia or Washington, D.C.? There are only two choices. Using what suggests that the questioner does not know the answer, and that there is no limit to the number of possible answers. If you choose which as your question word, you may have prior knowledge, and you are asking for information that is more specific. You may also be limiting the decision to a few choices. Please let us know if these examples and explanations have helped you, Zara. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
Our story today is called The Open Boat. It was written by Stephen Crane and is based on what really happened to him in 1896. Crane was traveling from the United States to Cuba as a newspaper reporter. One night, his ship hit a sandbar. It sank in the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Florida. Most of the people on board got into lifeboats. Crane was among the last to leave. There were three others with him, the ship's captain, the cook, and a sailor. These four men climbed into the only remaining lifeboat. The boat was so small that no one believed it could stay afloat for very long. None of the four men thought he would ever reach the shore. But the men fought the rough seas bravely with all their strength. Would they finally reach land? Here is Shep O'Neill with the first part of the story.
The small lifeboat bounced from wave to wave in the rough seas of the Atlantic. The four men in the boat could not see the sky. The waves rose too high. The waves, with their white tops, pushed at the open boat with angry violence. Every man thought each wave would be his last. Surely the boat would sink, and he would drown. The man thought that most adults would need a bathtub larger than the boat they were sailing. The waves were huge, and each created a problem in guiding the direction of the boat. For 2 days since the ship sank, the four men had been struggling to reach land. But there was no land to be seen. All the men saw were violent waves, which rose and came fiercely down on them. The men sat in the boat, wondering if there was any hope for them. The ship's cook sat in the bottom of the boat. He kept looking at the 15 centimeters which separated him from the ocean. The boat had only 2 wooden oars. They were so thin, it seemed as if they would break against the waves. The sailor, named Billy, directed the boat's movement with 1 of the oars. The newspaper reporter pulled the 2nd oar. He wondered why he was there in the boat. The 4th man was the captain of the ship that had sunk. He lay in the front of the small boat. His arm and leg were hurt when the ship sank. The captain's face was sad. He had lost his ship and many of his sailors. but he looked carefully ahead, and he told Billy when to turn the boat. "Keep her a little more south, Billy," he said. "A little more south, sir," the sailor repeated. Sitting in the boat was like sitting on a wild horse. As each wave came, the boat rose and fell, like a horse starting toward a fence too high to jump. The problem was that after successfully floating over one wave, you find that there is another one behind it, just as strong and ready to flood your boat. As each wall of water came in, it hid everything else that the men could see. The waves came in silence. Only their white tops made threatening noises. In the weak light, the faces of the men must have looked gray. Their eyes must have shone in strange ways as they looked out at the sea. The sun rose slowly into the sky. The men knew it was the middle of the day because the color of the sea changed from slate gray to emerald green with gold lights, and the white foam on the waves looked like falling snow. As the lifeboat bounced from the top of each wave, the wind tore through the hair of the men. As the boat dropped down again, the water fell just past them. The top of each wave was a hill from which the men could see, for a brief period, a wide area of shining sea. The cook said the men were lucky because the wind was blowing toward the shore. If it started blowing the other way, they would never reach land. The reporter and the sailor agreed, but the captain laughed in a way that expressed humor and tragedy all in one. He asked, "Do you think we've got much of a chance now, boys?" This made the others stop talking. To express any hope at this time, they felt to be childish and stupid. But they also did not want to suggest there was no hope, so they were silent. "Oh, well," said the captain, "we'll get ashore all right." But there was something in his voice that made them think, as the sailor said, "Yes, if this wind holds." Seagulls flew near and far. Sometimes the birds sat down on the sea in groups near brown seaweed that rolled on the waves. The anger of the sea was no more to them than it was to a group of chickens 1,000 miles away on land. Often the seagulls came very close and stared at the men with black bead-like eyes. The men shouted angrily at them, telling them to be gone. The sailor and the reporter kept rowing with the thin wooden oars. Sometimes they sat together, each using an oar. Sometimes one would pull on both oars while the other rested. Brown pieces of seaweed appeared from time to time. They were like islands, bits of earth that did not move. They showed the men in the boat that it was slowly making progress toward land. Hours passed. then, as the boat was carried to the top of a great wave, the captain looked across the water. He said that he saw the lighthouse at Mosquito Inlet. The cook also said he saw it. The reporter searched the western sky. "See it?" said the captain. "No," said the reporter slowly. "I don't see anything." "Look again," said the captain. He pointed. "It's exactly in that direction." This time, the reporter saw a small thing on the edge of the moving horizon. It was exactly like the point of a pin. "Think we'll make it, Captain?" he asked. "If this wind holds and the boat doesn't flood, we can't do much else," said the captain. It would be difficult to describe the brotherhood of men that was here established on the sea. Each man felt it warmed him. They were a captain, a sailor, a cook, and a reporter. And they were friends. The reporter knew even at the time that this friendship was the best experience of his life. All obeyed the captain. He was a good leader. He always spoke in a low voice and calmly. "I wish we had a sail," he said, "to give you two boys a chance to rest." So they used his coat and one of the oars to make a sail, and the boat moved much more quickly. The lighthouse had been slowly growing larger. At last, from the top of each wave, the men in the boat could see land. Slowly, the land seemed to rise from the sea. Soon, the men could see two lines, one black and one white. They knew that the black line was formed by trees, and the white line was the sand. At last, the captain saw a house on the shore, and the lighthouse became even larger. "The keeper of the lighthouse should be able to see us now," said the captain. "He'll notify the life-saving people." Slowly and beautifully, the land rose from the sea. The wind came again. Finally, the men heard a new sound, the sound of waves breaking and crashing on the shore. "We'll never be able to make the lighthouse now," said the captain. "Swing her head a little more north, Billy." "A little more north, sir," said the sailor. The men watched the shore grow larger. They became hopeful. In an hour, perhaps, they would be on land. The men struggled to keep the boat from turning over. They were used to balancing in the boat. Now they rode this wild horse of a boat like circus men. The water poured over them. The reporter thought he was now wet to the skin, but he felt in the top pocket of his coat and found 8 cigars. 4 were wet, but 4 were still dry. One of the men found some dry matches. Each man lit a cigar. The 4 men sailed in their boat with the belief of a rescue shining in their eyes. They smoked their big cigars and took a drink of water.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.